June's arm moved before her better judgment could catch it. The tomato left her fingers in a clean, furious arc and burst against the Alpha King's chest with a wet, satisfying slap. For one suspended second, the entire market square went silent. Merchants with coins still in their hands, children with sticky fingers frozen mid-reach, then gasps tore through the crowd. Across the square, Alpha King Jackson's amber eyes found June. Inside his chest, his wolf lost its ancient, battle-hardened mind. "She gifted us a tomato!" it howled with pure, delirious joy. "She wants to feed her alpha! Accept! Accept right now before she changes her mind!" The king nearly choked. June had not meant to hit the king. She was aiming for the smug man still clutching the scroll that declared every unmated Omega of age must present herself for the moonbinding selection. But as luck would have it, the king had stepped down from his horse at the exact wrong moment, and her months of fury found a target wearing a crown. Jackson's wolf, ruthless predator that had torn through enemy lines and stared down death without flinching, was currently spinning circles in his head. "What in the hells is wrong with you?" "She assaulted us," Jackson reminded his wolf. "With courtship fruit," his wolf insisted. "Fruit means forever." Jackson ignored the nonsense and fixed his gaze on the woman responsible for this chaos. She stood rigid beside her half-empty basket, auburn strands escaping her braid, simple linen dress smudged with dirt. No lowered gaze, no trembling apology. Just stubborn anger and the kind of pride that got people killed in Valor. He raised one hand, halting his guards mid-stride. His commanding voice cut across the square. "Stand down." His wolf whined in protest. "Do not bare your teeth. We are courting." Jackson stepped forward slowly, every inch the dark Alpha King. The crowd shrank back. He stopped just short of her stall, towering over her, voice loud enough for everyone to hear. "You dare raise a hand against your king?" June swallowed hard, but didn't drop her gaze. Protecting Fair was the only thing that had kept her going. If her little sister was forced into the selection, if anyone discovered what she could do. Jackson leaned in slightly then, close enough that his cedar and pine scent wrapped around her. His next words were just for her, barely more than a breath against her ear. "Come to the castle tonight, alone. Tell no one." His golden eyes held hers for a beat longer than necessary, cold to the watching crowd, but edged with something else. Surprise. Irritation at his own wolf, which was still cooing soft hands, strong heart. He straightened, voice booming again for the square. "Return to your hovel and consider yourself warned. The next offense will not be met with mercy." Jackson turned on his heel and mounted his horse, the bright red stain on his chest a vivid mark no one would soon forget. As he rode away, the crowd exhaled at last. But June felt the weight of 100 stares settle on her, like the points of arrows. Only when the last royal rider disappeared did she risk glancing toward the shadowed alley between the baker's shop and the old well. A small hooded figure waited there, perfectly still. For one terrible heartbeat, she feared someone else had noticed. Then the hood shifted. A familiar green eye caught the sunlight. Fair. Relief crashed through June so hard her knees nearly buckled. Her sister remained hidden among the crowd exactly as instructed. Safe. For now. "Before we continue, can you tell me what city you're listening from?" June didn't rush to her. That was the first rule they lived by. Never run, never look relieved, never show strangers where your heart lived. So she bent and gathered the scattered onions one by one, fingers shaking badly enough that one rolled under the baker's cart. Around her, the square slowly remembered how to breathe. "Mad girl. Did you see his face? He should have taken her head. Maybe he still will." June kept her eyes down until the murmurs faded and the crowd began to move again. Only then did she lift her basket and walk toward the alley. Fair waited in the shadow of the old well, small beneath her brown hood, one pale hand pressed hard against the stone wall. At 16, she still had the delicate look of a girl who had grown too quickly through too many hungry winters. Her green eyes, brighter than June's, darted over the crowd, over the road, over every guard still lingering near the square. "You hit him," Fair whispered. "I missed," June said. Fair stared at her. "That doesn't make it better." "It makes it more accurate." Fair's mouth twitched. "You hit the Alpha King with a tomato in the chest. I think accuracy is the least of our problems." June let out a tired, breathless laugh. "Some of it got in his ear, too. Maybe it finally improved his hearing." Fair's almost smile faded as quickly as it had appeared. She caught June's wrist, her fingers cool and trembling. "You have to leave town tonight." "I'm not leaving you, Fair." "June, kings don't invite women who throw things at them because they want polite conversation." She touched two fingers to her temple, the old signal between them. Too much. Too close. Not safe to speak. The whisper sight had first come when Fair was 9 and sobbed for days because she had brushed past their neighbor and heard his plan to abandon his sick wife before winter. Since then, June had learned that Farah caught intentions like hidden thorns beneath the skin, jagged fragments of truth that left her shivering for days or bleeding into her dreams. June cupped her sister's cheek, hiding the tremor in her thumb, by gently tucking a stray strand of hair back beneath Fair's hood. "Go home. Bolt the door. If anyone asks, I went to Widow Pell's with flour." "You're really going?" Fair whispered. "I have to. If I don't show, he'll come looking. And if he comes here..." June swallowed the thought. She pressed a lingering kiss to her sister's forehead, breathing in the familiar scent of herbs, terrified that if she pulled away too soon, she might crumble where she stood. "I will come back, I promise." Fair's lashes fluttered. For a heartbeat, June feared the sight had brushed against her own thoughts, the raw terror she was trying so hard to hide. But Fair only leaned in closer, voice barely a breath. "I think his wolf liked you." June pulled back, eyebrows raised. "Is that supposed to be useful information?" "It might be," Fair said, the ghost of a mischievous smile returning. "He was very enthusiastic. Use it to your advantage, June." By dusk, June stood before the castle gates in her cleanest dress and her oldest boots. The fortress rose from the black cliffs like something carved from night itself, its towers stark against a bruised violet sky. Torches flickered along the battlements as guards watched her approach with carefully blank faces. She had briefly considered bringing another tomato for courage, but that seemed less like bravery and more like a pattern. The guards led her through halls wide enough to swallow her whole. The air smelled of cold iron and the wild, musky edge of wolves. Ancient tapestries watched her pass, heavy with battles and golden-eyed alphas. June kept her chin high and her steps steady and counted the exits. If things went badly, she would not get far, but counting kept her mind from picturing Fair alone at home, every candle snuffed, every floorboard memorized by her nervous feet. They finally brought her to a council chamber lit by a roaring hearth. Alpha King Jackson stood beside it, changed out of the stained tunic, though a faint red mark still colored the edge of his collar, where someone had failed to scrub away all evidence of her treason. His gaze found her immediately. So did the full force of him. In the market, he had been terrifying. But here, alone in the amber firelight, his dark hair was swept back from a face that caught her completely off guard. Sharp, elegant cheekbones, a mouth that looked like it could ruin any woman, and a faint shadow under his eyes that made him look like a man who had not slept properly in years. Jackson's expression flickered with visible irritation. "You came," he said. "You asked." "I commanded." "I chose to interpret it as an invitation," June replied lightly. "It made the walk far less unpleasant." A smile threatened the corner of his mouth before he buried it. But behind that grim face, his wolf practically threw its paws up. "She walked all that way? Alone? We should have sent a carriage, with cushions and blankets." "No carriage," Jackson thought back through gritted teeth. "But she's our brave mate," his wolf whined, Next time we carry her ourselves, on our back, like a proper alpha. June tilted her head, studying him. Are you in pain? No. You look as if you're arguing with yourself. I often am. That explains the state of the kingdom, she said dryly. This time the ghost of a smile came dangerously close to winning. Jackson turned from the hearth and gestured toward the long table strewn with maps. Why did you throw it? June had prepared speeches on the walk. She had imagined herself accusing him of cruelty, injustice, arrogance, and at least three sins her aunt had once claimed were punishable by boils. But the question was so plain the truth came out instead. I was aiming for the Herald. Jackson was silent for a long beat. Your defense, he said slowly, is that your treason was poorly aimed? My defense, June shot back, stepping closer, is that your Herald was smiling while he told families to hand over their daughters? The humor vanished. She felt the shift in him like a drop in temperature. Still, she refused to retreat. The selection should not be forced. If an Omega wants to go, let her. If a family chooses it, fine. But you cannot send guards into homes and call it sacred. You cannot pretend choice exists just because the summons arrives on expensive parchment. Jackson watched her with an intensity that unnerved her. His voice softened. You speak as if this is personal. It is personal to every woman who receives one. That isn't what I asked. His gaze held hers. Who are you protecting, June? Her name in his mouth sent an unwelcome flutter through her chest. She lifted her chin. I came to ask for mercy, not an interrogation. Mercy for whom? For anyone too powerless to refuse you. Before Jackson could answer, the chamber doors burst open. A young officer stumbled in, mud caked to his knees. Your Majesty, Frostmere Watch has fallen. Rogue wolves crossed the eastern ravine at sunset. Jackson didn't curse or flinch. He simply grew still, the air around him sharpening as every man in the chamber straightened instinctively. In the span of a heartbeat, the man vanished, and the Alpha of Valor took his place. Calm, decisive, radiating a quiet authority that steadied the storm before it could break. How many? He asked. 12 confirmed inside the border. Maybe more behind them. Villagers? Evacuating, but the bridge road is blocked. He moved to the map table, issuing orders that cut through the rising panic like a blade. More officers poured in, filling the chamber with urgent voices, the clatter of boots, and the sharp scent of rain. June stepped back into the shadows, all but forgotten, except by Jackson, whose gaze somehow tracked her even as he commanded the room. He listened to 3 reports at once, corrected a route without looking twice, and stripped the fear from the air. Men twice her age obeyed mid-sentence, drawn to the unshakable certainty he offered them. June felt a reluctant pull in her chest, and immediately hated herself for it. She had come here to protect Fair, not admire his broad shoulders, or note the controlled rage in his voice when he heard children might be trapped. Jackson looked up suddenly and caught her staring. For one unguarded heartbeat, the king and the village girl stood across the war table while chaos swirled around them. His eyes burned with urgency, and something softer beneath it. We're not finished, June, he said. I can see that, June replied. Remain in the castle tonight. You'll be given a guarded room. June's pulse jumped. And in the morning? In the morning, he said, fastening a black cloak at his throat with sharp, impatient movements. When I return, you will tell me who you are protecting. I didn't agree to that. No. Jackson stepped closer. But you will. Because whatever you are hiding frightens you more than I do. Before she could protest, he turned on his heel and strode toward the door, clearly finished with both the conversation and whatever internal war was making his jaw tighten. Inside his head, the wolf made one final wistful plea. We should bring her more tomatoes, big ones, juicy ones. Let's plant her a whole kingdom of tomatoes. If you say tomato one more time, Jackson thought savagely, I will retire you to the stables. You cannot retire love. His wolf shot back with a huff. Jackson returned at dawn with blood on his sleeve, mud up to his thighs. June saw him first from the narrow window of the chamber they had given her. She had spent the night bargaining with exhaustion and losing badly. The room was suspiciously comfortable, soft bed, warm water, fresh bread and honey. But the guarded door made the difference between hospitality and captivity painfully clear. She had paced until the rug wore thin beneath her boots, a stolen supper knife tucked beneath her pillow. Every distant shout from the courtyard twisted her stomach. By morning, she had decided to escape through the window. Then she looked down and saw him. His black horse was lathered and blowing hard. Two wounded soldiers rode behind him, one slumped against his companion. Jackson dismounted before the horse had fully stopped, tossed the reins to a stable boy, and caught the elbow of a limping guard before the man could fall. It was a small gesture, but that somehow made it worse. June had steeled herself for cruelty. She had even braced for dangerous charm. She had not prepared for a king who returned from battle and noticed when one of his men was about to stumble. The door behind her opened. She turned sharply, nearly dropping the knife hidden in her sleeve. A maid entered with fresh water and delivered the message with nervous politeness. His Majesty requested her presence in the eastern solar. June followed her through corridors washed in thin morning light. Somewhere close, bread was baking, and the scent made June's stomach clench with homesickness. Protect fair. The words moved through June with every step, steady as a pulse. The eastern solar overlooked the ravine beyond the castle, where mist clung to the pines, and the first light struck the black stone cliffs. Jackson stood at the far end of a long table, cloak discarded, shirt torn at one shoulder, blood still drying across his knuckles. A half-hearted bandage hung loose around his arm. He looked exhausted, powerful, and unfairly compelling in the morning light. He glanced up as she entered. His attention settled on her like a physical touch, noting the shadows under her eyes, the too tight braid, the tension in her stance. You didn't sleep, he concluded. Neither did you. I had wolves at my border. I had wolves at my door, June shot back. Something moved across his face, quiet and unreadable. Inside his chest, his wolf stirred with indignation. She didn't feel safe. We gave her our softest blankets, and she still didn't feel safe. This is terrible. We should have slept outside her door. Jackson rubbed his brow. Absolutely not. He gestured toward the chair across from him. Sit. I prefer standing. You stole a knife from supper, Jackson said mildly, eyes flicking to her sleeve. And you're gripping it at a terrible angle. You'll cut your own wrist before you reach me. Heat flooded June's face. That sounds like exactly the kind of advice a tyrant gives his prisoner. You are not my prisoner. Am I free to leave? Not yet. Then you may want to polish your wording, Your Majesty. His gaze held hers, exhaustion warring with a patience she didn't know what to do with. If I meant you harm, June, a supper knife wouldn't do much against me. Is that meant to comfort me? No, he said quietly. It's meant to be honest. The answer stole some of the fire from her anger. June dropped her gaze to the table, tracing the charcoal circles around Frostmere Watch and the small red stones marking vulnerable villages. Too many red stones. You stopped them? She asked, before she could stop herself. Yes. All of them. Enough to keep the villages safe. For now. Jackson saw her looking at the map, and turned one report so she could read it. She expected him to hide the details, but he did not. The script was cramped, stained by rain. Two shepherd boys rescued, one watchtower burned, 7 soldiers wounded, 3 dead. Her throat tightened. Jackson watched her face. You care? I'm not made of bark, she muttered. No, he said, the corner of his mouth lifting. You're made of fury and poor aim. Her eyes snapped up. He was watching her with that faint, dangerous half-smile. But June felt it all the way down to the soles of her old boots, and for one humiliating second she forgot the room, the guards outside, the summons. She looked away quickly, heat climbing her neck. I came here to discuss the selection, she said, forcing her voice steady. So did I. Then end it. His smile faded into thoughtfulness. You ask for simple answers to old machinery. I ask you not to grind girls through it. Jackson leaned one hip against the table, arms loosely crossed, studying her. The moonbinding selection binds the packs to the crown. Every noble alpha expects it. Every rural pack uses it for alliances. Every temple matron swears the old rites keep us stable. Do you seriously believe that? Jackson glanced toward the window, where morning light caught the dried blood on his sleeve. I believe stability is a word powerful people use when they are afraid to admit who pays the price for their comfort. June went quiet. She hadn't expected that. Neither, apparently, had his wolf, who gave a pleased rumble. That made us sound wise. Now tell her we love her braid. No. But her braid looks like autumn rope. That's not a compliment. It is if we say it with feeling. Jackson's jaw tightened for one brief, suffering moment. June tilted her head, catching the shift in his expression. Does your wolf often interrupt matters of state? June realized her mistake only after his gaze sharpened. She had been too comfortable. Too quick. Too much like herself. Why do you ask? She shrugged, forcing carelessness over the sudden wave of panic over her body. You keep making that face. Either your wolf is talkative or the castle has terrible ventilation. Jackson did not look away. Most people can't tell when an alpha is speaking to his wolf. I'm observant. I doubt that's the whole story, he murmured, pushing off the table and stepping closer. The warning in his voice was gentle. June straightened, refusing to let him loom over her. If you summoned me here to accuse me of witchcraft, I prefer the word treason. It sounds cleaner. A low chuckle rumbled from his chest. I summoned you because you threw a tomato at me in front of half my kingdom. Your kingdom survived. My dignity did not. That startled a bright laugh out of her. Jackson stilled. Just a subtle shift. His fingers loosening on the edge of the table, amber eyes warming in a way that made June feel as if she'd accidentally handed him something fragile. Inside him, his wolf went quiet for half a breath, then whispered, Make her do that again. Her laugh. It's my favorite song. June noticed the change and immediately folded the laugh away, guarded once more. I need to go home. Not yet. My sister will worry. The word slipped out before she could catch it. Jackson's gaze softened. Sister, he echoed gently. She's the person you're protecting. What's her name? June's hand curled tight against her skirt. He studied her for a long moment, then stepped back, giving her space instead of pressing. I won't ask again today. Today? I'm learning diplomacy. Slowly, she muttered. A faint, self-deprecating smile touched his mouth. Yes. A soft knock broke the tension. An older servant entered with a tray of tea, broth, and a small plate of neatly sliced tomatoes arranged with suspicious care. Jackson stared at the plate. His wolf, clearly having placed the order while Jackson was distracted giving battlefield orders, mentally wagged its tail. She needs nourishment. Jackson's jaw tightened in pure, restrained horror. The servant, blissfully unaware, set the tray down and left. June eyed the tomatoes. Is this poisoned? No. A tribute? Also no. Should I throw one back? She asked. His wolf gasped in delight. Absolutely not, Jackson said far too quickly. June's suspicion deepened, but so did her amusement. she picked up a slice between two fingers and ate it with deliberate slowness, watching him watch her. The day unfolded strangely after that. Jackson did not lock her away, but he didn't release her either. He gave her measured freedom. The old library under quiet guard, the records chamber with the door left unlocked. He let her see just enough to make her curious without feeling trapped. In the library, June pretended to study dusty histories of the selection while listening to courtiers whisper beyond the shelves. She learned Frostmere was only one of several border disturbances. She learned the noble houses were already arriving for the selection, filling the guest wings with silk, perfume, brittle laughter, and daughters who flinched when guards passed. She also learned that the king noticed everything. At midday, she watched him cross the great hall and silence a complaining nobleman with nothing but a look. The lord had been griping that the border emergency would delay the welcoming feast. Then the Alpha King spoke, voice low enough that the entire hall leaned in. "Lord Avonheart, if dead shepherd children inconvenience your appetite, I can have your supper served in the infirmary beside the men who carried them home." Lord Avonheart went the color of sour milk. June, hidden near a pillar with a book, felt something warm and traitorous unfurl in her chest. Yet when Jackson's gaze found her across the hall, not by chance, but because some part of him always seemed to know exactly where she stood, the warmth only deepened. His wolf preened. "She saw us. She likes justice. More justice for our fair lady." Jackson turned away before his expression could betray him. By afternoon, he brought her to the records chamber. Shelves climbed two stories high. Ledgers lay stacked on tables beneath colored glass windows that turned the light blue and green across Jackson's hands as he opened a folio. "I want to show you something," he said. "If it's a royal family tree, I warn you I'm hard to impress." He turned the folio toward her. Names filled the page, dozens of them, written in neat columns beside birthplaces, pack affiliations, and small notations June did not understand. Some names had been marked with a silver dot. "These are selection records," Jackson said. June's stomach tightened. "Recently, I started noticing discrepancies. Women listed as attending but never recorded as leaving. Others transferred to noble houses that later claimed they never arrived." June scanned the page. "You think someone is taking them?" "I think someone is finding rare gifts and removing them before the crown can verify their safety." "The crown," June said, unable to keep the bitterness from her voice. "Meaning you?" "Yes." "And you expect me to believe you are worried for them?" "No." His voice was calm, steady. "I expect you to decide what you believe based on what I do next." He showed her more records, enough for the shape of the horror to emerge. A healer from Brackenford, whose family received sudden coin and never saw her again. A dream-touched girl from the southern marshes reassigned to a noble house that later denied knowing her. A young widow with truth sense who vanished after the last selection feast. The room felt colder by the time June stepped back from the table. Fair could help. The thought came so suddenly she almost pressed both hands over her ears, as if that could trap it inside before Jackson saw. Fair could stand near a lying clerk or a smiling official and feel the hidden rot beneath their words. Fair could find the girls no one else could save, or Fair could become one of them. June turned away, breathing through the sharp twist in her chest. Jackson didn't touch her, though she felt the impulse in the careful space he kept between them. At last he spoke, voice low. "This is why I asked who you were protecting." June closed her eyes. "Rare abilities have been appearing more often," he continued. "Temple scholars call it a blessing. Noble houses call it opportunity. I call it a list of people someone will try to own." She thought of Fair at 9, sobbing into June's apron. Fair at 12, refusing to touch anyone during the summer fair. Fair last winter, shaking after hearing their landlord's hidden delight at the thought of turning them out. "She's only 16, June said. Jackson went utterly still. My sister, she forced out, meeting his eyes. Her name is Fair. She has a gift, he said carefully. June's eyes shone with fear. She has a curse people will call a gift once they realize it is useful. Jackson's expression shifted, not with hunger or triumph, but with something quieter. Grief. What does it do? He asked. I haven't agreed to anything, she deflected quickly. If I even consider letting her help, no one sees her. No court, no selection hall, no noble families. Agreed. You haven't heard the rest of the bargain yet. I heard enough. June stared at him, thrown. That's a terrible negotiating strategy. I'm not negotiating for ownership of your sister, he replied simply. June looked down at the records, at the silver-marked names of girls who had vanished. Her voice came out raw. If she helps you find who is gathering these people, then you end mandatory attendance at the selection. And Fair remains anonymous. No royal records, no court whispers, no one comes for her later. Jackson held her gaze without hesitation. Done. Why are you acting like it costs you nothing? It will cost me a great deal, he admitted, but I should have found the strength to do it sooner. June had no answer for that. For a long moment, the only sound was the faint hiss of dust settling in the colored light. Then Jackson's wolf whispered with quiet delight, We protect her little sister. Family likes us. Very good for our future tomato festivals. Jackson's expression hardened into something long-suffering. June caught it and, despite herself, a fragile smile tugged at her mouth. Your wolf is making plans again. Unfortunately. Anything I should fear? Jackson rubbed a hand over his jaw. No, I'll keep him in check. The promise in his voice sent a small, traitorous spark through her chest. For a moment, the stolen names, even her fear for Fair, faded beneath the quiet intensity of his gaze. He wasn't pushing. He was simply standing there watching her like she mattered more than the kingdom waiting outside that door. June believed him. And that, she realized with a slow, terrifying drop of her heart, was far more dangerous than throwing the tomato had ever been. Fair arrived at court in a borrowed cloak, muddy boots, and the expression of a girl who had already decided royalty was vastly overrated. June saw her first from the top of the courtyard steps and forgot, for one wild second, every guard watching, every courtier whispering. She lifted her skirts and ran. So much for her first rule. Fair barely had time to drop her satchel before June caught her in a fierce embrace. Her sister smelled of rain, road dust, and the lavender soap June made too weak because lavender cost money. For three heartbeats, June simply held her. You're crushing my ribs, Fair mumbled into her shoulder. Good. Then I know you still have them. I brought the brown shawl. I told you to bring the blue. The blue makes me look like a grieving pigeon. June pulled back enough to look at her. Your concern is pigeon aesthetics? My concern is survival, Fair said solemnly. No one suspects a girl in a tragic brown cloak. They assume I already have enough problems. Behind them, one of Jackson's guards made a sound suspiciously like a cough hiding a laugh. June pressed her hands to Fair's face, checking for injuries. Did anyone follow you? No. Did anyone speak to you? Many people spoke to me. I'm very charming. Her sister's grin softened. No one dangerous. I changed wagons twice and told one nosy merchant I was joining a convent devoted to silence. June stared. You? I said I was considering it. Even the gods would reject that application. Fair grinned, and the brightness of it hurt June's chest because she had missed that grin more than she had allowed herself to admit. Then Fair's gaze shifted past June's shoulder. Alpha King Jackson stood at the edge of the courtyard. He wore black again, because apparently kings with brutal reputations always dressed to attend their enemies' funerals. His cloak moved in the wind, his amber eyes fixed on the sisters with an intensity June felt before she turned. The courtyard quieted around him. Fair tilted her head. He's taller than I expected. June pinched her arm. Jackson approached slowly, every step measured, as if he had noticed the way June's hand tightened around Fair's sleeve and meant not to startle her. He was learning her fears too quickly. Fair, he said. Fair looked him up and down. Your Majesty. Inside Jackson's head, his wolf exploded with joy. Jackson's jaw tightened. Fair's eyes widened. June felt her sister freeze. Fair glanced between them, a dangerous spark of delight lighting her face. His wolf, sensing an audience, grew bolder. Hello, Fair. We are June's mate. Do you approve? Blink twice if you approve. Fair blinked once, then twice. Jackson went pale. June's stomach dropped. Fair. Jackson made a sound no king should ever make. The nearest guard suddenly found the sky fascinating. He recovered quickly, lowering his voice to something calm and commanding. Fair, you will repeat nothing of what you just heard, to anyone. Fair blinked up at him, all mock innocence. Repeat what, Your Majesty? Jackson's mouth twitched. Thank you. June narrowed her eyes, sensing she was being managed. Is someone going to explain why my sister is suddenly grinning like she's won a bet against the gods? A misunderstanding, Jackson said smoothly, the picture of royal composure. Nothing that concerns the courtyard. Then his tone shifted. He looked directly at Fair, all trace of amusement gone. Your gift is yours. No one here has a claim to it. Not the crown, not me. If at any point you wish to leave, you tell your sister and she will tell me. You have my word. Fair searched his face with that unnerving stillness June knew too well, the whisper sight brushing carefully against him. You mean that? She said softly. Jackson nodded. His wolf added, We protect our mate's heart. You live there, Fair. Fair's eyes shone for half a breath before she looked away and pretended to study the castle. By noon, she had been tucked into the quieter east wing under the thin pretense of being June's maid. Jackson assigned only two guards to the corridor. June noticed because trust wasn't a door you simply walked through. It was a narrow bridge, and every plank had to be tested. Fair noticed different things. The tall guard is afraid of mice, she murmured the moment the door closed. June froze mid-unpack. You promised to be careful. I was careful. I only brushed the edge. Fair dropped onto the bed and poked the embroidered coverlet with open suspicion. This place is loud, June. Before she could ask more, the door opened and Jackson stepped inside without his usual procession of guards. I've arranged for the first test, he said. Nothing public, nothing that exposes her. Fair raised a hand. I dislike being called her while I am present. Jackson looked at her, faintly amused. My apologies, Fair. Better. June rubbed her forehead. Try not to antagonize the king before supper. Is that a royal decree? Fair asked sweetly. It may become one, Jackson said. The test took place in a small receiving chamber, where afternoon light slanted through narrow windows and turned floating dust into threads of gold. Jackson brought in three clerks one by one under the guise of verifying old selection ledgers. June stood close enough to Fair that their sleeves brushed. Jackson stood across the table, watching everyone except the person he most wanted to watch. The first clerk was nervous but harmless. His greatest sin, according to Fair afterward, was that he had stolen cinnamon from the kitchens and blamed a footman. The second was irritated because he wanted a promotion. The third made Fair's face go pale. June saw it instantly, her sister's fingers tightening on the table's edge until the knuckles bleached white, her eyes going distant and unfocused, as if something vast and dark had brushed too close. Jackson dismissed the man with a calm nod. The door closed with a soft, final click. June reached Fair first, heart hammering. What did you hear? Fair swallowed hard, voice barely above a whisper. Not him. Something behind him. A name he was terrified to think clearly. Jackson stepped closer. What name? Malrek. The room seemed to contract around the word. June had seen Lord Malrek twice since arriving at court. Silver at his temples, elegant in dark green. He sat on Jackson's council and spoke rarely, which made others listen when he did. He had greeted June once with perfect courtesy and no visible curiosity. Jackson's expression revealed nothing. What else? He asked. Fair rubbed her palms against her skirt, looking ill. The clerk is afraid because he moved records. Not many, just enough. He thinks if Lord Malrek learns anyone asked, his sister loses her position. June frowned. His sister works for Malrek? No, she works for someone who owes him. Jackson's eyes darkened. Fairy's next words came heavier. There was something else. A room, no windows, women singing under their breath because silence makes them afraid. June felt the blood drain from her face. Jackson's hand tightened around the back of a chair until the wood creaked. His wolf made a low, deadly growl in the back of his mind. Find them. He looked at June, and for once there was no guarded distance between them, only shared horror, shared purpose. We need to be certain, he said. June nodded, though every instinct urged her to gather Fair in her arms and run until the castle became a bad shape on the horizon. That evening, the court gathered for the first formal dinner of the selection season. The great hall blazed with candlelight. Noble daughters drifted through it in pale gowns like moths trapped in amber. Alphas watched from polished tables, their smiles sharp with assessment. June stood at the edge of it all in a borrowed blue dress, hating the silk against her skin, hating how Jackson had gone briefly speechless when he first saw her. His eyes had lowered, then lifted. His hand had flexed once at his side. His wolf, however, had no dignity. Blue. She is wearing sky. We are marrying the sky. Jackson had taken a long drink of water. Now June tried to focus on the room instead of the memory. Fair stood nearby dressed as a maid, carrying a tray. Jackson had argued against placing Fair in the hall at all. June had agreed with him. Fair had ignored them both, pointing out that no one truly watched servants unless they wanted more wine. Lord Malrek sat three seats from the king, speaking to a temple matron with his easy, polished calm. Nothing about him looked monstrous. He did not leer at the young women. He did not clutch power like a greedy child. He smiled, listened, inclined his head, and somehow made everyone around him feel they had been personally chosen for his attention. Fair passed behind his chair. June stopped breathing. Fair's fingers trembled once around the tray, but she kept walking until she reached the servant's door and disappeared. They found her moments later in the narrow passage beyond the hall, one hand pressed to the cold stone wall, her face drained of all color. A serving boy hovered nearby, frightened and useless, until Jackson sent him away with a quiet order. June caught Fair's hands. Tell me. Fair's breath came uneven. He knows about the missing women. Jackson's face turned cold enough to frighten even June. He doesn't call them missing, Fair whispered. He calls them gathered. The word slithered under June's skin. Fair squeezed her eyes shut. He has people hidden in households, temples, quiet border estates. Some went willingly, promised protection. Some didn't understand what they were agreeing to. Some, her voice cracked. Some are afraid to leave. June wrapped an arm around her sister, holding her tight. Jackson asked, very softly, did he sense you? Fair opened her eyes. That was answer enough. In the hall beyond the passage, applause rose for a speech. Jackson turned toward the sound, and the man June had begun to know disappeared beneath the Alpha King everyone feared. This time she welcomed the change. We leave separately, he said. June, take Fair to the east wing. Lock the door. Speak to no one except the guards I placed there. June nodded. And you? I smile through the rest of dinner, Fair stared at him. That sounds awful. His mouth curved without humor. Inside him, his wolf growled. I will bite him. Not yet. A little bite? No. A warning bite. Jackson ignored him, but June saw the flicker across his face and knew enough now to understand. She stepped closer, lowering her voice. Your wolf wants to kill him, doesn't he? Jackson looked at her, the coldness in his expression softening at the edges. Among other things, tell him to wait. The wolf perked up instantly. She speaks to me now? June's mouth almost smiled despite the fear twisting through her. Tell him Fair is safe only if we are careful. Jackson's gaze held hers with a heat that had nothing to do with the torches. He says he will try. Fair muttered. He said that very reluctantly. June would have laughed if she were not terrified. By the time she locked Fair safely inside their chamber, something had already shifted in the shadows. A quiet realization had taken root in Malrek's mind. The sisters were asking the wrong questions, and they were far too close. Somewhere in the castle below, beneath the laughter of the selection feast, a trap began to close. Silent, patient, and perfectly designed. Fair lay curled on the bed, still in her borrowed maid's dress. You're thinking too loudly, June said softly. Fair's mouth curved without humor. That's supposed to be my line. June watched her sister's profile in the firelight. She looked younger when she was tired, the sharp wit rubbed thin until the frightened girl beneath showed through. We should never have brought you here. You didn't bring me. I came. Fair turned her face toward June then, and the look in her eyes made June's stomach tighten. Do you remember Mara Bell? June went still. Of course she remembered. Mara had been 14 with a gap-toothed smile and a laugh that startled birds from rooftops. 3 winters ago, when the grain tax doubled and the village started choosing between bread and firewood, Mara had come to June's cottage shaking so badly she could barely hold her cup. Fair had touched her hand and gone white. Something was wrong in Mara's house. Something with her stepfather. Something Fair had heard and June had feared. They had tried to help quietly. A blanket, a place by the hearth, a whispered plan to speak to the miller's wife. But the next morning Mara was gone, sent to relatives no one could name. June had told Fair they were only children, powerless, alive only because no one important had noticed them yet. Fair had never forgiven herself. Mara was different, June whispered. No, she wasn't. Fair sat up, wrapping her arms around her knees. She was scared. We knew she was scared. And we waited because waiting felt safer. June closed her eyes, the old guilt rising sharp and bitter. We were children. I know. Fair's voice cracked in the middle, and that was worse than tears. But I'm not a child anymore, June. Neither noticed the folded note until the fire burned low. It had been slipped beneath the door without a sound. For half a breath, they stared down at the paper together, both understanding the same terrible truth. Nothing good came quietly under a locked door after midnight. Don't touch it, June said, but Fair already had. The moment her fingers brushed the seal, her face changed. Inside, the writing was uneven, as if the person holding the pen had been fighting pain or panic. The girl who sings in the dark is 12. Her name is Leora. They are moving her before dawn. June read the line twice before its cruelty fully bloomed. Fair made a small broken sound. No, June said immediately, voice cracking. No, that is bait. Fair's eyes stayed fixed on the page. Leora, it's not real. It is. Fair's voice was barely there. I heard her in Malrek's thoughts. A girl humming to keep from crying. June reached for the note. Fair let her take it, but her gaze had already gone distant. Look at me, June pleaded. This is what he wants. He knows exactly where to cut. Fair's throat worked. If there is even a chance she exists. Then we wake Jackson. By the time the guards move, she'll be gone. Fair's voice broke on the last word. Better gone than you taken with her. Fair flinched, and June hated herself for saying it, but not enough to take it back. Fair stood slowly. That is what we told ourselves about Mara. June grabbed her wrist. Stop using her ghost to punish yourself. I'm not. Fair looked down at June's hand, then gently covered it with her own. I'm using her to remember who I wanted to become. For one terrible second, June saw the woman her sister could be, kind, funny, stubborn in a way no locked door could contain. Then Fair smiled, small and sad. I won't go alone. But Fair's fingers brushed her wrist, tender as an apology. The whisper sight did not need force. Not with someone who trusted her completely. Not with someone whose heart had always lived open to her. A soft hush moved through June's bones. A gentle command slipped beneath thought, familiar enough to be mistaken for comfort. Rest. Her knees weakened. Fair, June whispered, betrayed and terrified. I'm sorry, Fair said, tears shining now. If I don't go and she dies, I become the kind of person who survives everything and saves no one. Fair caught her before she hit the floor, lowering her carefully to the rug. She tucked the fallen blanket around June with shaking hands, then pressed a kiss to her forehead, the way June had done for her 100 times before. I love you, Fair whispered, voice breaking. And I'm going to come back. When June woke, the fire was ash. She knew that something was terribly wrong because her body had been arranged with care, blanket tucked gently around her like she was still a child who might catch a chill. Then she saw the empty bed. The room tore open around her. Fair. The name came out too small, too quiet for the panic clawing up her throat. June scrambled upright, slipped on the blanket, and caught herself against the chair. The note lay on the floor beside her, wrinkled where her hand must have crushed it before the sight had pulled her under. The window was unlatched. Beyond it, a narrow ledge disappeared into the dark, toward the old chapel roof. June ran to it, leaned out, and saw, far below, a smear of mud on the stone, where someone small had dropped into the cloister garden. The castle woke, like a beast struck through the heart. Torches flared. Guards poured through corridors and servants' passages. The two women Jackson had placed at Fair's door looked devastated, one with blood on her lip where she had bitten it raw, trying to stay awake. June could not hate them. There was no room left inside her for anything except Fair. Jackson found June in the east wing chamber with the note clenched in her fist. He came in without cloak or crown, only a shirt hastily fastened, and a sword belt buckled crooked in his haste. His eyes went first to the empty bed, then to the open window, then to June. Whatever he saw on her face changed him. Not into the king, not into the commander, but something far more dangerous because it was personal. June thrust the note at him. He knew. Jackson read it once. A pressure rolled through the room so heavy the candle flames bent sideways. Somewhere deep inside him, his wolf rose with a fury so ancient and black that June felt every hair along her arms lift. Jackson handed the note to his captain. Seal every gate. No guest leaves. Search the chapel ruins, the old well road, the wine tunnels, and every carriage house. Find Lord Malrek. June stared at the open window, voice cracking. She knew it was a trap. She still went. Because there might be a girl singing in the dark, and I taught her to be kind even when she was afraid. Jackson stepped closer. June. No. She backed away, because if he was gentle, she would shatter. I was in the room. I was right here. She put me to sleep like I was just another locked door she had to get past. She did it to save you from following. She should have let me. Yes, Jackson said quietly. June looked at him then, and the honesty in his eyes steadied her more than any promise could have. He was simply standing in the wreckage with her. His wolf pushed hard against him, frantic in its panic. "Tell her we will find little sister. Tell her I will bite through mountains. I told you we should have slept outside the door." Jackson closed his eyes briefly. Then he knelt in front of her. "My wolf would like me to tell you," Jackson said carefully, "that this is not your fault." A broken sound escaped her. "He also says," Jackson continued, eyes locked on hers, "that we will find Fair, and then he will bite Lord Malrek in several places I'm not willing to name." June let out a watery laugh. A guard appeared at the door, breathless. "Your Majesty, Lord Malrek's rooms are empty. His carriage remains, but two chapel horses are missing. We found this beneath the old well gate." He held out a strip of brown wool. "Fair's cloak." June folded the cloak against her chest, breathing in the faint scent of rain and lavender soap. Jackson turned to the guard. "Rouse the Eastern Riders. No horns, no banners. Trackers at the Chapel Road within 5 minutes." The guard vanished. June lifted her head. "I'm coming." Jackson stepped closer, voice low. "You will come beside me, not ahead of me, not alone, and certainly not as bait." Her breath shook. "I'm not leaving her without her." "I know." She reached out first, not far, just enough to catch his wrist. His pulse beat hard beneath her fingers. Then she rose onto her toes and pressed a soft, trembling kiss to his cheek. A faint flush crept up the back of his neck, visible even in the firelight. For one heartbeat, the entire castle fell away. There was only the warmth of his skin, the roughness of stubble, and the quiet thunder of his heart under her fingertips. June pulled back, cheeks burning, but she did not let go of his wrist. Jackson's voice, when it came, was rough. "Time to bring them home." They found the first sign at the old well gate, tucked beneath the hinge where no rider would see it unless he knew what to look for. A sliver of blue thread tied in 3 knots. June saw it before the tracker did. She dropped from the saddle so quickly Jackson caught her by the waist before her boots fully touched the ground. For one dizzy heartbeat, his hands were warm and firm at her sides, steadying her. And June hated that even terror could not stop her body from noticing him. Then she wrenched free and knelt beside the gate. "Fair," she breathed. Jackson crouched beside her, close enough that his cloak brushed her shoulder. "What does it mean?" June touched the thread with trembling fingers. "When we were little, we used to mark hiding places. 1 knot meant safe. 2 meant danger. 3 meant follow, but carefully." His eyes sharpened. "She expected you to come. She knew I would." June swallowed against the ache in her throat. Jackson nodded once to the tracker. "Search for more thread. Blue if she had time. Brown if she tore it from her cloak." They followed the chapel road east beneath a sky bruised purple with the last hour before dawn. The horses moved fast, hooves muffled by wet pine needles and old moss. No horns, no banners, only Jackson's riders spreading through the trees like shadows with blades. June rode beside Jackson, but he watched her constantly. At the fork near the ravine, a scrap of brown wool waited on a hawthorn branch, folded once around a thorn, then pierced through the middle. June closed her eyes. "Left." The tracker frowned. "The hoofprints go north." "She wants us left." Jackson did not question her. "Left," he ordered. The tracker obeyed. June looked at Jackson. "You trust me that much?" His gaze stayed on the trees ahead. "My wolf says you're always right." June blinked, thrown badly enough that warmth flickered through her panic. They found the third clue at sunrise beside a stream where the horses had been watered. 3 small stones stacked beneath the roots of a birch, the top one marked with a smear of soot. June's breath broke. "When Fair was scared, she used to stack stones outside the cottage, said it kept bad thoughts from getting inside. June touched the soot with her thumb. A rider returned from scouting ahead, face grim. There's an old fortress 2 miles north, Ironholt, abandoned since the Thorn Wars. Jackson's expression hardened. Not abandoned anymore. Ironholt crouched in the northern mountains like a beast that had died angry and refused to rot. Its outer wall was broken in 3 places. Black ivy crawling through the cracks, but faint smoke threaded from a watchtower chimney. Jackson halted the riders under the cover of trees. June's fingers tightened around Fair's strip of brown wool. You stay beside Sorn until I signal, Jackson said. June looked at him in disbelief. I'm not staying behind. For one suspended breath, fear and frustration burned between them. Then Jackson stepped closer, lowering his voice so only she could hear. June, I am not trying to take this from you. I am trying to make sure you reach her alive. The anger in her chest faltered. His eyes held hers, gold and grave. Malrek planned for your courage. He planned for Fair's guilt. He may have planned for mine. So we do not give him the version of ourselves he expects. What version does he expect of me? The sister who runs straight into the dark. June's throat tightened. Jackson's hand lifted slowly, brushing a loose strand of hair back from her cheek. I need the woman who notices threads on thorns and soot on stones. June nodded once. They entered Ironholt through the old water tunnel beneath the western wall, guided by Fairy's final clue, a tiny blue thread wrapped around a rusted grate. The tunnel was narrow, half flooded, and foul with mineral stink. June's skirts dragged through icy water. Jackson moved ahead of her with one hand on his sword and the other occasionally reaching back when the footing turned treacherous. She took his hand each time. Inside the fortress, the walls carried sound in strange, haunting ways. Footsteps echoed overhead. Low voices drifted. Somewhere deeper, a woman coughed, and beneath it all, thin, wavering but unmistakable, someone hummed a familiar tune. June stopped dead. The song was fragile, barely more than a breath, but June knew its shape by heart. Fair had sung it as a child when storms rattled the shutters. Not because she liked it, but because June had used it to cover the sound of their mother crying after the rent collectors left. She taught them the song, June whispered, throat tight. They followed the sound. The lower hall opened like a wound beneath the fortress. Not a dungeon of chains and filth. Instead, they found clean rooms with guarded doors, warm braziers, and people who looked fed and clothed, but watched constantly. A boy no older than 13 slept with one hand bandaged in cloth. 3 women looked up as Jackson stepped into the corridor, and June saw fear move through them before recognition could catch up. These were not Malrek's victims. Some had believed him. Some still did. Then Fair's voice came from somewhere beyond the last archway. He gives you warm beds and calls it mercy. He gives you locks and calls it safety. He tells you the world will waste you, hurt you, fear you. And he is right about some of that, which is why the lie works. June ran. Jackson caught up in 2 strides. They reached the central chamber as Malrek turned. He stood beneath a cracked dome open to the pale morning sky, elegant even here in the damp stone ruin. Dark green coat unwrinkled, silver hair neatly tied. Fair stood at the center of the room beside a stone table, pale but upright, 1 cheek bruised, her hands unbound. Then she saw the people around the chamber. Guards, gifted men and women, some frightened, some wavering. Malrek had not lured Fair here to torture her in secret. He had brought her as proof. Ah, Malrek said, voice soft with genuine regret. The devoted sister and the king who mistakes sentiment for justice. Jackson drew his sword in 1 smooth motion. Half the chamber flinched. Malrek did not. If you kill me here, Your Majesty, he continued calmly, You prove exactly what I have told them. The crown destroys what it cannot command. The tension in the room stretched taut enough to snap. Jackson's wolf surged forward with a low, deadly growl in the back of his mind. I can prove his throat is tender. Not yet. June's gaze stayed locked on Fair. Her sister's eyes flickered once toward the left wall, toward three ledgers stacked on an iron-bound chest. June understood immediately. Fair had not been waiting helplessly. She had been working. Malrek turned slightly, addressing the gathered more than the king. For generations, rare gifts have been squandered. Healers born to villages that work them to death. Dreamers dismissed as mad. Truth speakers beaten into silence because no one wants truth unless it serves them. I gave them purpose. Shelter. Discipline. You built a cage, June said, voice steady despite the fear clawing at her throat. Malrek's eyes moved to her. I built a place where power was not wasted on fear. Fair lifted her chin. No, you built a place where fear learned to call you master. A murmur moved through the chamber. Malrek's expression tightened. Fair looked at the woman beside the brazier. Sira, he told you your daughter refused your letters. She didn't. He burned them because grief made your dreams sharper. The woman went white. Fair turned to the bandaged boy. Tovan, he said the crown would cut your hands off if they learned what your fire could do. Jackson ordered healers for a boy at Frostmere before he knew his name. The boy's eyes darted toward the king. Malrek's voice cooled. Hush, child. Jackson stepped forward, voice carrying through the chamber like steel. Lord Malrek, you are charged with treason, unlawful confinement, falsification of royal records, and conspiracy against the crown. Malrek gave a soft laugh. Charged by whom? You? Here in a ruin, surrounded by people who know exactly what kings do with gifts they cannot control? No, Jackson said. He looked toward the archway. Captain Sorn entered with six royal guards and behind them, three temple matrons, two council lords. Malrek recovered quickly. An impressive performance, but without records. June moved, not toward Malrek, but toward the iron-bound chest. Malrek's guard lunged to stop her, but Jackson's wolf broke through him in a flash of black force and gold eyes, not fully shifted, but something in between. The guard hit the wall and stayed down. The chamber erupted. Malrek seized Fair by the arm and pressed a knife to her throat, yanking her back against his chest before she could twist away. June froze. Jackson froze too, every inch of him lethal. Enough, Malrek said, voice no longer smooth. You think freedom will save them? Freedom is hunger. Freedom is mobs. Freedom is little girls hearing monsters in their own homes and no one coming. I made them necessary. I made them protected. June's voice shook with rage. You made them yours. Fair's eyes met June's across the chaos, then dropped deliberately to Malrek's hand. His ring. A green stone set in silver. Fair had once stolen June's hairpin to pick the pantry lock and eat winter preserves. June had scolded her for a week. Fair had claimed any tool was useful if someone arrogant forgot it was sharp. June still had the same pin in her braid. Slowly, as if overcome with fear, June reached up to cover her mouth. She slid the pin free. Jackson saw. His gaze did not move, but June felt him understand. She threw the pin, not at Malrek, but at Fair. Her sister caught it against her palm, twisted, and drove the pin beneath the edge of Malrek's ring. The green stone cracked. Silver light burst outward, sleeping dust hidden beneath the setting, the very trick he had used to subdue those who resisted him. Fair jerked her head back and held her breath. Malrek inhaled in surprise. His grip loosened. Jackson took over. Malrek was clever, controlled, dangerous with a blade, but Jackson was the Alpha King, and his fury had found its shape. Steel rang against stone. Malrek slashed Jackson's side, drawing blood. Jackson barely seemed to feel it. He drove Malrek back across the chamber, not wild, not reckless, but precise in a way more frightening than rage. Each strike took ground. Each step forced Malrek farther from Fair, farther from the ledgers, farther from the people he had spent years convincing that he alone could protect them. At last, Jackson disarmed him with a brutal twist that sent Malrek's blade skittering across the floor. Then Jackson caught him by the throat and slammed him against the stone pillar hard enough to crack old mortar. His wolf snarled savagely in his mind. "Bite now." Jackson's hand tightened, claws threatening to break through. Malrek gasped, but even pinned and bleeding, his eyes gleamed with vicious triumph. "Go on then," he rasped. "Show them exactly what kings do when they cannot control what they fear." Jackson's grip trembled with the effort of holding back. His wolf howled for blood, for vengeance, for the simple, brutal satisfaction of tearing out the threat at its source. But Jackson held back. With a guttural sound, Jackson forced Malrek down to his knees before the gathered witnesses. "No," he said, voice rough and deadly calm. "You'll live long enough to watch every cage open." Fair sagged into June's arms. June caught her, laughing and crying all at once. "You absolute nightmare." Fair buried her face against June's shoulder, voice muffled but warm. "You followed the knots." "Of course I followed the knots. I left very good knots. You put me to sleep." "I left apologetic knots," Fair said, pulling back just enough to offer a sheepish grin. "And I'll make it up to you. I'll let you win every argument for the next 10 years, even the ones about whose turn it is to churn the butter." June let out a watery laugh and held her tighter, pressing her face into Fair's hair. Jackson turned from Malrek then, blood darkening his shirt, his face still carved with violence, until he saw the sisters holding each other. Something in him softened so painfully June had to look down, the sight too raw, too intimate for the ruined chamber around them. His wolf sniffled. By sundown, Malrek's ledgers had been carried back to the castle beneath armed guard. Some of the gifted left Ironholt the same day, walking through the gates in stunned silence because no one stopped them. Others stayed long enough to testify. Some had nowhere to go at all. And Jackson quietly ordered rooms prepared throughout the castle. Unlocked rooms. The next morning, the great hall filled beyond capacity. June stood beside Fair beneath one of the carved stone arches as nobles, pack leaders, temple representatives, and ordinary villagers crowded shoulder to shoulder beneath the vaulted ceiling. Jackson stood before them in black. His wounds were hidden beneath his coat, but June knew exactly where they were. The hall fell silent. When Jackson spoke, his voice carried effortlessly to the furthest wall. No woman would ever again be forced to attend the moonbinding selection. No family would receive a summons they could not refuse. No guards would drag daughters from their homes and call it tradition. The old law was finished. For one heartbeat, nobody moved. Then someone began to cry. Another voice joined them. Then another. June looked around and saw mothers holding daughters tighter, fathers wiping their eyes when they thought no one noticed, girls who suddenly looked as though they could finally breathe. Pride swelled inside June so fiercely it almost hurt. When the crowd finally began to disperse, she slipped into the quieter corridor outside the hall. She needed air. Needed a moment to understand why looking at Jackson suddenly felt dangerous in an entirely different way than it had weeks ago. Footsteps approached behind her. Jackson stopped beside the window overlooking the western courtyard. For a long moment, neither spoke. The silence felt strangely intimate, the kind that only existed after people had survived something together. At last, Jackson said quietly, "What will you do now?" June laughed. "I've spent so long trying to survive that I never planned beyond it." His gaze shifted toward her, warm and searching. "What would you do if you could choose anything?" Nobody had ever asked her that before. Not when there were crops to harvest, bills to pay, fair to protect. She stared out the window. My bakery needs repairs. Jackson's mouth curved into a small, genuine smile. That's your dream? My first dream involves a roof that doesn't leak. The smile widened slightly, and June's chest tightened. Gods, that smile. She was in serious trouble. What about you? She asked. The amusement faded from his face. For a moment, she glimpsed the exhaustion beneath the crown. The kingdom is going to be furious with me for several years. Only several? I'm optimistic. That startled a soft laugh from her. His eyes warmed in a way that made the corridor feel much smaller than it should have. June looked away first, because she knew exactly what would happen if she didn't. Jackson was quiet for a long moment. Then he said, "You and Fair are free to leave whenever you wish." June turned back. Something inside her sank. He must have seen it on her face. His expression softened. "What I mean to say is you don't owe me anything, June." "You nearly died for us," she countered. "You changed the law." It needed changing. Frustration flashed through her. "Must you make everything sound so simple?" A faint smile touched his mouth. "If you stay, I need to know it's because you want to." Emotion lodged painfully in her throat. "What if I don't know what I want yet?" Jackson held her gaze. For a long moment, he looked less like a king than a man standing on the edge of something he could not control. "Then find out," he said softly. "Take the time you need." That night, June made her decision. She and Fair would go home, back to their village, back to ordinary life, back to a place where there were no crises, no conspiracies, no castle walls, and if she still missed him there, if she still found herself thinking about amber eyes and impossible patience and one deeply ridiculous wolf, then she would know. The next morning, Jackson stood at the castle steps as June and Fair prepared to leave. He kept his face composed, every inch the steady king. But when June climbed into the wagon and looked back, she saw it. The brief, unguarded moment where his expression faltered. Then he steadied himself again, offering her the smallest nod of farewell. And for the first time in her life, June realized that freedom and heartbreak could feel alarmingly similar. Jackson's wolf did not take it well. "She is gone?" She chose to go. But she proposed. She threw a tomato. A sacred tomato. The wolf spent every day sighing like a heartbroken bard. "We are suffering." "I am aware. Go get her. She needs time. I will give her time from outside her window. I will howl romantically. Tastefully. No." On the fourth day, the wolf staged a full rebellion. It took over Jackson's legs mid-stride, marched him straight to the stables, and practically shoved him onto his horse. "Up you go. We are not suffering another minute." Jackson sat in the saddle, thoroughly betrayed by his own body. June's bakery was small, warm, and still dusted with flour from the morning rush. She had told herself every hour since leaving that this was right. Fair was safe upstairs, asleep for the first time without flinching. The village no longer whispered when royal riders passed. The world had changed. And still, when the bell above the bakery door rang, her heart knew before her eyes did. Jackson stood in the doorway without crown or cloak. Dark hair wine-tossed, one hand behind his back. He looked too large for the little shop. Too dear for the defenses she had been rebuilding. And for the first time since she'd met him, he looked genuinely nervous. The Alpha King had faced border wars, conspiracies, assassins, and one very determined tomato. But apparently bakeries were where he drew the line. Slowly, June folded her arms. "Your Majesty." His mouth curved faintly. "I choose to interpret that as a warm welcome." Then he pulled something from behind his back and placed it gently on the counter. A tomato. Perfectly ripe. Bright red. June stared at it. Jackson cleared his throat. After considerable reflection, I've concluded the first one may have sent the wrong message. The laugh broke out of her so suddenly it turned into a sob halfway through. She covered her mouth, but it was useless. Tears slipped down her cheeks, and Jackson looked briefly panicked. Inside him, his wolf erupted. See? Courtship fruit works every time. We are now twice engaged. Jackson's face went scarlet. June laughed harder. The kind of helpless laughter that arrived straight from the heart and took everything else with it. His wolf, drunk on victory, added happily. Also, magic clearly runs in her family. Imagine our pups. Jackson made a strangled sound and looked toward the ceiling. I am begging you to stop. June went still, cheeks flushed. What? I arranged the lumber yesterday. He deflected quickly. Her breath caught. Lumber? For your leaky roof. His gaze held hers, warm and steady. I thought we could fix it together? A slow smile touched his mouth. No, I came to ask if I may stay. June's hands rose to his chest, right over the place where the first tomato had burst and changed both their lives. Then she pulled him down. The kiss was nothing like the stories sung in village taverns. It was warm, shaking, and fiercely real. It tasted of tears, flower, and the impossible relief of choosing, and being chosen back. Jackson's hand slid to the small of her back, drawing her closer as the kiss deepened, slow and hungry, like he had been starving for this moment since the first splat of tomato hit his chest. His fingers tightened in the fabric of her dress. A low, rough sound escaped him as she rose onto her toes, pressing closer, and for one perfect, breathless stretch of time, the world narrowed to nothing but heat and heartbeats and the taste of finally letting go. His wolf immediately dissolved into ecstatic triumph. More tongue! More tongue! Jackson laughed against her mouth, a deep rumble that vibrated through her chest and made her smile into the kiss. June thought that sound might be her favorite thing in the world. How was this from 1 to 10? Should I write a spicier version? Let me know what you think in the comments. Thank you.